Blog Talk Radio.
Friday show for you. So the Daily Beast has another Trump appointment that they're reporting on, and it again is really, really bad, right in line with all of his other appointments. So I'll have a lot to say about that, and I think it's been undersold just how bad this is, and some people aren't even reporting on it. Like in mainstream media, go ahead and try to find a story about this, and you ain't gonna find it, bitch. So we got that. We're going to talk about that. We're going to lead with that. And we got Bernie Sanders and Chris Hayes did a town hall event with a bunch of Trump supporters this week. And parts of it pissed me off. So I'll be talking about the parts that pissed me off. We also have a new poll out on Barack Obama's popularity. And there's some interesting things in there that I think are noteworthy about when he became the most popular. Interesting. So we're going to talk about that and much more. Buckle up. Let's get started here. And like I said, we're going to do it with President Donald Trump and some more appointments of his. The Daily Beast is reporting on another Trump appointment. They say the following: President-elect Donald Trump will appoint former CNBC host Larry Kudlow to chair the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Kudlow hosted the Kudlow Report on CNBC for 5 years between 2009 and 2014. Kudlow served as Associate Director for Economics and Planning in the Office of Management and Budget during President Ronald Reagan's first term. So Larry Kudlow. He's going with Larry Kudlow. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Larry Kudlow, unless you're like a big-time political junkie and economic junkie. You probably don't watch CNN. There's roughly 33 people in the country that watch CNN, and they're all on Wall Street. Excuse me, not CNN, CNBC. What's wrong with me? Brain, fire up, get working. So, he's been on CNBC for a long time, and he's a silly person. He also had a radio show for a while. It was actually on the biggest talk radio station here in New York. When I say the biggest talk radio station, that doesn't mean much because talk radio is obviously dead. But his whole thing is, and this is how he sounds, by the way, I'm Larry Kudlow, and we're going to talk about economics and stuff, and I'm such a genius, and I've got the stock market figured out. And this is one of those brilliant people who, now he wasn't on CNBC at the time, at least not with a full-time show, but he's one of the geniuses who would argue before the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession, everything's fine, I don't know what you're talking about. The few economists who've come out and said that there's going to be a crash, I don't think they know what they're talking about. Sour grapes, that's what this is, sour grapes. Sour grapes, a term meaning like, oh, you're down on the market when you shouldn't be, or something like that. Anyway, so he's a silly person. He's wrong about nearly everything. He said about Mitt Romney, he predicted a landslide Mitt Romney victory. Landslide Mitt Romney victory. So he's very astute and in touch with the common man. But let me tell you more about what you need to know about him, because this stuff is really important. So he's for deregulation. He's for tax cuts for the rich. He's for TPP. He would abolish the corporate tax. He is still, to this day, at this super-duper late date, he's pro-NAFTA. Fucking NAFTA. In fact, he said the following in 2008. One of the greatest unchallenged political assertions out there right now is that NAFTA costs American jobs. Yeah, that's just factually incorrect. He said about the minimum wage, it, quote, hurts the working poor. And he even supported George W. Bush's attempts to privatize Social Security. So, in other words, this pick from Donald Trump is a pick that goes against every single populist thing that he's ever said. The few times Trump said, hey, we're going to rebuild infrastructure, or we're going to protect Social Security and Medicare, or we're not going to outsource, and I'm against TPP. He's now surrounding himself with a cadre of idiots who are in favor of the opposite of all those things. So he does want to cut Social Security. Larry Kudlow does. He does want to do TPP. He does want to outsource more jobs. So this is an absolute disastrous pick, and yet again, it's kind of exposing that Donald Trump's populist rhetoric was nothing but rhetoric, and it was just an attempt to get votes, an attempt that worked, by the way, because he ended up winning the Electoral College, so he got the votes that he needed to get in order to win. But, you know, he surrounded himself since then with the swamp. He says he's going to drain the swamp. He ain't draining the swamp. He's building a new swamp on the White House lawn. He's got two Goldman Sachs people in top positions in his administration, or he picked them for top positions in his administration, Treasury Secretary and control of the budget. So that should fucking scare the shit out of you. The president of Goldman Sachs he picked. Who does that? He picked the CEO of ExxonMobil for Secretary of State. That is fucking lunacy. So the final thing I want to bring up, though, about Larry Kudlow, because, again, I need you to get a full picture of who this guy is and just how disgusting and wrong he's been about everything. In June 2002, Larry Kudlow infamously advocated for the invasion of Iraq to help the stock market. It's bad enough to be for it. It's even worse if you're for it for some gross, selfish, piggy reason about, well, we want stocks to rise, so obviously you should invade a sovereign country that didn't attack us and occupy it for over a decade and kill hundreds of thousands of civilians and set up a worldwide torture regime. Oh, what? That's an immoral thing to say? I mean, think about how deeply immoral that is. I mean, these guys, man, he really is surrounding himself with just horrific characters. And they never learn the lessons of history. I mean, you go back to the Great Depression, and what kind of economic policies were in place that led to it? You had deregulation, you had tax cuts for the rich, you had the smartest guys in the room on Wall Street being able to do whatever the fuck they wanted, and we had the crash. Fast forward to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. What happened? Well, we had, between Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, we had round after round of deregulation. Obviously, under Bush, we had tax cuts for the rich also. And eventually, that led to a giant crash. So whenever you do voodoo economics, as George H.W. Bush called it, the result is disastrous. So this is Reaganomics. You know, Reagan implemented this stuff, too. The economy was great when he was in office because everything took off, but it was fake growth. And as soon as he left office, boom, the bubble burst and we had a big recession. So every time we've implemented Reaganomics or voodoo economics, it's been a boom-bust cycle. The economy takes off and the bubble pops. Takes off, bubble pops. Because it's all fake growth. It's not sustainable. And it's not like the golden age of economic expansion in the U.S. when right after the Great Depression, or I should say during the Great Depression, we implemented the New Deal reforms and we regulated Wall Street and we put in Glass-Steagall. What happened? We had decades of sustainable growth and no giant downturns. I mean, people forget about that. But the reason why that was the case was we had smart regulations and we had a tax system that benefited the middle class. So even under fucking Eisenhower, a Republican, he was in there during the golden age of economic expansion. You know what the top marginal rate was on the rich? 91%. Now understand, that's not the real rate. That's just the nominal rate. That's what it is on the books. The effective rate was more like 43%. But that's still higher than what we have right now. And it led to sustained economic growth because, yes, you redistributed wealth and people in the middle class and people at the bottom had more money. They were able to buy the goods that the so-called captains of industry were making, and everything went round and round and round just fine. And you had a wealth distribution where the top 1% was making about 12% of the income, whereas today they're making over 24% of the income. That's unsustainable. So yes, redistribution of wealth, yes, a progressive tax system, it doesn't just benefit the rich, it benefits everybody in society. And you have sustainable growth, and you have good jobs, and you have happier people. Well, now we're going in the opposite direction, and appointing a guy like Larry Kudlow is just begging for another giant economic downturn, and that's exactly what we're going to get at some point. I don't know the exact source of what it's going to be, but it's either going to be from, for example, the student debt crisis, the regular debt that families have, like credit card debt that families have. Both of those are over $1 trillion each. It could be from derivatives. It could be from the housing market, again, because we just reinflated the bubble. Whatever it is, there's a million ways. The fundamentals of the economy are not there. So there's a million ways that this thing can the bubble can burst, and it could just slap us in the face. So appointing guys like Larry Kudlow, putting guys like Larry Kudlow in power, that's a recipe for disaster. There's no good ending to Larry Kudlow being in power, because we already know his philosophy, his ideology, has failed repeatedly through history, and he refuses to learn the lessons, and he's that disconnected from reality that he would say something like, let's invade Iraq to help the stock market, and I think Mitt Romney's going to win in a landslide. Yet another disastrous pick from Donald Trump. Okay. All right, now, let me cue this clip up for y'all, because I got quite a clip here that involves Bernie Sanders. I think you're going to like this one. Oh, am I missing? No, I'm not. Never mind. Here we go. Bernie Sanders and Chris Hayes did a town hall event with a bunch of Trump supporters this week, and there was an exchange that really got under my skin, and I wanted to share it with you, and then we'll come back and discuss.
Senator Sanders is talking about free college education here. Stand up for a second. Tell me your name.
Mary Magdalene Moser.
Mary Magdalene, I saw you nodding, shaking your head vigorously in disagreement to both arguments about the minimum wage and free college tuition. So maybe let's start on the latter, because the senator said he wanted an argument. What do you think of the idea of free college tuition?
That's the moment I stopped listening to anything coming out of your mouth when you said that, because it is so absurd. Who is going to pay for it? Why don't you address how college tuition has skyrocketed 6,000% since the 1980s? You can't have an industry where once you pass a seniority level, it is impossible to fire you. That's ridiculous. No other industry has that type of protection. That needs to go. Tenure needs to go.
Well, no, I don't think tenure needs to go, and I don't think... Okay. So here is the point, okay, and it hasn't gone up 6,000%. It has gone up a lot, not 6,000%. So let's stick to the facts. But here is the issue, very simple issue. In the United States of America, Mary, do you think all people, regardless of their income, all young people, should have an equal right to get a college education, or should that only benefit the wealthy or upper middle class?
I believe the way the United States works as it is today, where every single human being in the United States has the opportunity to go to college, I do not believe it is a right, and I do not believe that I should be expected to pay for not only my education and my children's, but somebody else's as well.
But Mary, when we are losing at least $100 billion every single year, because large multinational corporations stash their money in the Cayman Islands and other tax havens, that's not you who's going to be asked to pay more in taxes.
Okay.
We have massive levels of income and wealth inequality. Corporation after corporation doesn't pay a nickel in taxes. Donald Trump, a multi-billionaire, proudly told us he doesn't pay a nickel in federal taxes.
Jeffrey Immelt CEO of GE, who proudly declared he paid 0% in corporate taxes.
Right.
Why did Barack Obama name him his chief economic
advisor?
You
are damn right. That was a stupid thing to do.
You know, as I watched that, the thing that kept going through my head was, help Bernie to help you. Help Bernie to help you. I got this feeling from that woman of, like, just no. Like, her brain was shut off. No. 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 You're a Democrat and you're Bernie Sanders and you've been called a socialist on Fox News. No. 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 I want to make your life better. No. 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 Hey, I think maybe the rich should pay more in taxes and you should pay less in taxes. No. 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 Hey, let's talk about this, how the rich are screwing you. Yeah, Barack Obama and the rich are screwing us, too. Like, what did you expect Bernie to say? Like, no, I will protect Barack Obama no matter what, even when he does wrong things. No, he conceded that in 0.2 seconds. He's like, no, of course, yeah, 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 this guy's an establishment Democrat. Yeah, yeah, he's done many things that are terrible for the working class. Some things that are good, other things that are terrible, because he's also bought by Wall Street. You're talking to a principled person who actually cares about you and actually cares about the issues. So you got to be able to, and I'm speaking specifically to all the right-wingers here, you got to be able to cut through the bullshit, know what is propaganda, what's not propaganda, who's on your side and who's not on your side. And you also can't be happy in your ignorance. And that's what she is. Because she said, it is, quote, so absurd for you to talk about free college. Quote, so absurd. No, what's absurd is the system we have right now. Over $1 trillion in student loan debt. The cost of college skyrocketing. And then she started talking about the cost skyrocketing. What do you think Bernie's trying to do? Subsidize the current prices we have right now? No, he wants to reform it to bring the prices down and give everybody a right to college if they so choose to go to college. So, no, it's not so absurd. What we have here in the U.S. right now is so absurd. How can it be so absurd if so many other modern nations, and some non-modern nations, by the way, have free college? In fact, let me give you just run through a few here. It's so absurd to have free college. Tell that to Germany. Germany, they seem to be doing all right. Finland, France, Norway. You know who else has it? Sweden. And, oh, look at this, Brazil. What happened to we're number one? America's number one. We can do anything we want, God damn it, because we're number one. You say it, we can do it, because we're America. We can do anything, except do basic things like free college. We already have fucking free high school. High school and fucking elementary school is funded by your tax dollars. That's what free means. He's saying, oh, let's just do that with college, too. Brazil could do it. And she's like, it's so absurd, we can't do it here. Really? We can't? We put a fucking guy on the moon! We put a man on the moon! We can't do it. Can't do free college. What does that even mean, we can't do it? It's a simple reallocation of tax dollars and resources and giving a shit about the next generation. That's all it is. You know who else is able to do free college? Sit down. Slovenia. I got nothing but love for people in Slovenia. But I do find it hilarious that there are Americans who are ignorant. She's just ignorant. You got to call it what it is. Who's like appalled and offended. She's almost offended. I'm offended by the idea of free college. I'm so offended by it. We can't do that. It's so absurd. So absurd that fucking Slovenia could do it. But you don't think we could do it. And again, help Bernie to help you. He's trying to do the right thing for the American people, and you're standing in the way. You're like, I don't want nice things, damn it. Keep screwing me. But then at the end, see, the thing is, at the end, she clearly shows that she doesn't want to be screwed when she brings up Obama. Like, oh, Obama's appointing this guy who paid zero in taxes. How corrupt is he? No, but that's right. That's what Bernie's against. That's what he's fighting against. That's also what he's fighting against when it comes to college. He wants to set up a system that helps the average person. But you have your brain shut off. You're, no, no, no. Okay, understand. How can we afford it? How can we afford it? Oh, I don't know. Maybe if we stop doing fucking military adventurism all around the world and stop being an imperialist power. Take a look at this. This is the U.S. military budget. over 50%, 54% of the discretionary budget goes towards the military. How can we afford it? How can we afford free college? I don't know what you're talking about. That's crazy, man. I don't know what you're talking about. We can't afford free college. Don't be ridiculous. Don't be a stupid socialist communist idiot. We can't afford it. Don't be an idiot. Who's being an idiot here? We spend more on our military than the next eight top nations combined, the eight other top military spending nations combined, and most of them are our allies. What do you mean? We can't afford it. Can't afford it. Do you know the bailout of Wall Street cost over $10 trillion? $10 trillion. And if I'm not mistaken, there's something as high as 14 million or something like that? Excuse me, 14 trillion? I said million. That's like a 13 seconds in the bailout. Well, how can we afford it? How can we afford it? I don't know. Maybe don't do that. Don't bail out the rich. Bail out the people. Don't bail out the people who bankrupted their companies and tanked the economy of the country for personal benefit. Bail out the people. The war in Iraq cost $7 trillion when all is said and done by the year 2053. When you add in the interest and the cost for the veterans, $7 trillion. We're bombing seven countries right now. How can we afford it? How can we afford college? Free college is so absurd, even though so many other modern nations managed to do it. I'm sure your opinion on healthcare is the same. Look, you got to help Bernie to help you. It turns out when you look at the polls, most people get it. And most people are like, yeah, Bernie, we're with you. Help us. We're paying tax dollars. Let's prioritize. Let's put healthcare on the top of the list. Let's put education on the top of the list. Most people are like that. But here's the sense I get, and this is why it's so frustrating. The sense I get from a lot of these right-wingers, especially a lot of the right-wingers who voted for Trump because Trump was a populist, the sense I get is that they're tired of the establishment. They're tired of being screwed too. But their answer is the wrong answer. Their answer was, I want populism, but they picked it in the form of this reality star buffoon who now we know is building a new swamp on the White House lawn, far from draining the swamp. He's picking Goldman Sachs for everything, doing exactly what Hillary would have done. So you wanted to do the right thing and get rid of the establishment and have somebody that helps you, but the Fox News propaganda has gone too deep in your brain, so now you're scared. Oh, socialism, I'm scared of that word. Ooh, a left winger, I'm scared of that. Ooh, Bernie Sanders, you know, you think of fucking Castro or Mao or Stalin when you hear him talk. But understand, that's all garbage. That's all bullshit. That's not true. He's not going to fucking scrap capitalism. He's a democratic socialist. A democratic socialist is very similar to those systems that they have in Scandinavia, very similar to Denmark, Sweden, Norway, where they have the basics taken care of, you know. You have good wages for people. You have universal health care, universal education, not nearly as many interventions. I mean, he wants to cut back on the interventions, all the war. So all he's trying to do is set up a government that, yes, still allows for a meritocracy and still allows for capitalism and small business and the free marketplace, but also has your basic needs met. It's the perfect mix of modern ideology, the perfect mix of capitalism and socialism to foster people's well-being without seeping away their incentive to get ahead. So this is what he's in favor of, but you've bought into the propaganda. And the result, honestly, is really sad, because there you are arguing with one of, like, I don't know, under 20 politicians in Congress, so in the House of Representatives and the Senate combined, about, you know, how you don't think he's trying to help you, or you think, like, he's an idiot or something, when again, he's one of the few people who's actually fighting for you, and you can't even acknowledge it, you don't get it, you know, you think he's out to get you or something. Does it really look like he's out to get you? How quick did he concede that point about Barack Obama also being part of the establishment and being a sellout? Conceded it pretty quickly, didn't he? You're damn right he shouldn't have appointed that guy. Why? Shocker, he actually gives a fuck about you, and he gives a fuck about implementing the right policies to make everybody's life in the country better. So please, people, to anybody who opposes him, stop being ignorant and stop buying into the propaganda. If you listen to what the guy says and what he calls for, he is the ultimate political centrist in the sense that he's right in the center of mainstream opinion when you go issue by issue with the polling data. So keep that in mind when you think of Bernie Sanders and understand his ideas are not radical. It's radical to disagree with those ideas. Okay. All right, I'm going to take a break. And when we come back, we have a new poll out on Obama's approval rating, and there's an interesting chart that breaks it down by generation. So we're going to do a wee bit of an analysis on that. And the Democratic senator from Delaware, Chris Coons, went on CNN, and he spoke about the direction the party should go in. So we're going to talk about that and much more. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Are you the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. The left. You will fake, so I'm gonna slap you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. God, please protect me if this shit go left. Cause I can cook a kilo by my cat.
Son of a bitch, alright, we're back. Okay, got much more for you. Let's go to CNN's Chris Cuomo, who had on a Trump surrogate. And they argued quite a bit here, but I think they had an interesting back and forth. CNN's Chris Cuomo had on Trump surrogate Sean Spicer, whose name definitely sounds like a porn star name. Sean Spicer is as porny as it gets. And they went at it over Trump's corruption and his electoral win. Let's watch.
I get what the press wants, but the American people have understood exactly what they're getting, and they voted overwhelmingly for him. He has been very clear about what he owns, the role of his family, and everything else since he announced that he was running for president, and they overwhelmingly elected him with all of that on the table. So I understand a desire by some on the left, and frankly some in the media, to want to comb through certain documents that he has. But the American people are clearly satisfied with what they got, not only on Election Day, but since he's been elected, his approval rating's gone up like 20-some-odd points. So not only have they elected him, they've become more and more pleased with the job that he's done, and he hasn't even assumed the office
yet. I thought you guys didn't like polls, but if we want to play with them, we know that more people are concerned about his business dealings than those who are not. We know that his approval rating is low compared to where other president-elects have been at this point. But let's dismiss the polls. You said they overwhelmingly voted for him. There is no definition of overwhelming that would meet the
306
criteria.
Electoral votes?
It's one of the lowest.
Sure there is.
It's one of the lowest electoral margins we've had. I think it's 46 out of 50 something. It's one of the lowest in the last few cycles we've had. He won. He's the president-elect. He will
Look,
be the next president
right
of the United States. But I'm saying, if you want to be straight about it and transparent,
I do.
It wasn't overwhelming. And
no. If you look at, hold on, Chris. There is nobody on your network
right
and the rest of the media that gave him a chance going into Election Day. None.
How is that
the
relevant?
Headlines, Newsweek had.
How does that
Newsweek
make his win overwhelming?
Because to say that he was going to get crushed, Hillary Clinton was planning fireworks on the Hudson,
right,
everything was going to happen. He wins with 306 electoral
right
votes, 9 of 13 battleground states,
right,
2,300 counties, and you're saying you doubt whether that's overwhelming?
Yeah, because it's about 100,000 votes. It's one of the smallest electoral margins we've had, and he lost the popular vote by millions. But he won. I'm not disputing that, and I know you like that as a distraction. I'm not giving it to you today. What I'm saying
it's not a distraction.
Of course
it's a
it
fact.
Is. Of course it is, because you're assuming there's a premise involved that is absent from this discussion. There is no suggestion of delegitimizing the victory. What I'm saying is transparency, which you were touting yesterday, is woefully lacking where it matters most. We do
not know, Chris,
the business dealings are for the kids or for Trump. And you were supposed to tell us today, and you delayed it.
Damn. Okay, that was a rare good job on CNN. And credit to Chris Cuomo for that back and forth there, because that's what he should be doing all the time with all of his different political guests who are either representatives of politicians or they are the politician. So that is well done. Because he wouldn't let him get away. He's trying to wiggle out. He's like, no, let me explain this to you. So first, let's go to the claim of overwhelming victory. Chris is right. There's no definition of overwhelming victory that Trump's win was overwhelming. Even when you go to his strongest claim, which is the Electoral College, when you do the comparison between Trump's win in the Electoral College and the history of wins in the Electoral College, there's only John Kerry and George Bush, and George Bush and Al Gore were closer in modern times. So most of them, I mean, there were electoral college wins of over 500 electoral votes, Bill Clinton won with, I think, beat Bob Dole with, I think, 361. Obviously, Obama beat Romney, and Obama beat McCain with over, one was 332, and I forget what the other one was, but it was well over 306. So there were some wins with over 400 electoral college votes. So, yeah, when you make a list of all of them throughout U.S. history, it ranks towards the bottom of the size of the victory, even in the electoral college. So there's just not an argument there of he had an overwhelming win, because that's not an overwhelming win. And then obviously his point gets even weaker when you get to the popular vote. She won by over 2 million votes in the popular vote. Now understand, you guys know I don't like Hillary Clinton. I despise Hillary Clinton. I also despise Donald Trump. But so me saying this, I'm trying to make the point here that me saying this is not like a rah-rah pro-Hillary, I'm so butthurt over her loss kind of thing. To me, it's a logic, rationality thing of, oh, she got over 2 million more votes. She should have won. I mean, the system should just be one person, one vote. I don't agree with the Electoral College system. In fact, I think it's kind of fucking crazy when 40% of our elections from 2000 and on have gone to the opposite of the person that the most people voted for. Yeah, there's a fucking flaw in that system. I don't agree with that system. So, yeah, if anything, I think her margin of victory is above the margin of victory that other presidents have had. I think, what was it, George W. Bush beat John Kerry in the popular vote by less than Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump. You see what I'm saying? So his win, George Bush won, and he had less than 2 million more votes than John Kerry. And then he claimed a mandate when he was in office. I have a mandate. The people overwhelmingly voted for me, so I have a mandate. By that logic, Hillary Clinton has an even bigger mandate than you do, and she ain't even president. So, yes, there's no argument. Stop making that point. And I also agree with Chris Cuomo that I'm not saying this to delegitimize his presidency. In fact, he wasn't even trying to argue that point. It's just that doucheface decided to bring up overwhelming victory. No, don't say that, because I got to correct your ass, because it ain't an overwhelming victory. But I'm not trying to delegitimize him. Yes, he's going to be the president of the United States, and that's what it is. But the main point, and this is what Chris went on to explain, is the transparency with the business connections. Trump made a press he said he's going to do a press conference the other day about his business connections and what he's going to do with the business going forward, because he obviously there's a million conflicts of interest. He's like, reschedule. We're not doing it today. Everybody's like, what the fuck? And then the next day he walks out with Kanye West. So he had time to talk to Kanye West, who literally just got out of a mental institution, but he didn't have time. No, let me explain to you what's happening with my businesses and what we're going to do to fix it. And I'll tell you why he canceled the press conference, because he has no fucking answer. Just like Hillary Clinton, with Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. Yeah, you accept money from Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and then you pretend like you're on the side of human rights as you give them weapons deals because they gave the Clinton Foundation money. That's corruption. That's clear corruption. That's a clear conflict of interest. Donald Trump was, as president-elect of the United States, was meeting with real estate moguls from India doing business deals. Yeah, that's corruption. Yeah, that's a conflict of interest. Now, how am I supposed to know that you're going to be fair and objective when it comes to India? You're not. You're going to let them get away with whatever they want to get away with because you got business with them. Same thing with the call from Taiwan. There were reports that the reason why him and Taiwan had that nice call after he got elected is because he had somebody from his business call them a few weeks before and talk about, hey, maybe we do a Trump hotel there. So, again, international diplomacy crumbling. China's pissed at us because of the call with Taiwan. But the only reason, reportedly, that he did that call was maybe there's some business involved in this. He opened up seven new businesses in Saudi Arabia while he was on the campaign trail. So again, you're going to hold them accountable? You're going to sanction them when they do wrong things? Of course not. You're going to give them even bigger weapons deals because you have a financial incentive to be on good terms with them. This is the same kind of fucking corruption that we were pissed at Hillary Clinton for, and you're doing it right in front of our face. And you're the idiot parade on your team is trying to go out there and pull the wool over everybody's eyes. Overwhelming victory. He has a mandate. Oh, my God. No, there's no conflicts of interest. I'm not talking about conflicts of interest. That doesn't even make any sense, conflicts of interest. What's a conflict of interest? What are you talking about? Imagine Hillary Clinton appointed fucking two Goldman Sachs people at top positions. If Hillary Clinton appointed somebody from Goldman Sachs to control the federal budget and appointed somebody from Goldman Sachs for Treasury Secretary, everybody would be like, oh, fucking corruption defined. But Trump does it, and they're still trying to claim hilariously, he's a man of the people. I don't know what he's talking about. He said, there's no conflict of interest. There's no corruption. Please, man, please. This is just sad at this point. So, again, credit here. This is rare that I give CNN credit, but credit to Chris Cuomo. I want you to do that with everybody. Because there's a famous clip of Chris Cuomo saying from, I think, 2014, that, oh, nobody's been a bigger cheerleader of Hillary Clinton than us, or something like that. Not something to advertise, not something that's good, something that honestly should probably get you fired. Because you're saying, objectivity? Holding people accountable? No, if I like you, I'm not going to say shit. Go ahead, get away with it. Oh, Chris, what are you doing? No, take this same mentality of being, you know, fierce against people who come on and forcing them to tell the truth. Do that with everybody. Okay. Next. Let's go to what's happening in The Intercept. Excuse me, what's happening in the Netherlands as reported by The Intercept. Okay. Robert Mackey of The Intercept has quite a story about politics in the Netherlands right now. He explains how Geert Wilders, who, by the way, his name is spelled G-E-E-R-T, but I think it's Geert, and Wilders is how I hear people pronounce it, but it's spelled W-I-L-D-E-R-S. So I don't know. Maybe I'm pronouncing it right, maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong. I used to say Geert Wilders. But Geert Wilders is how I hear people pronounce it, so whatever. But he explains how Geert Wilders, who is a far-right politician, was up on trial for hate speech, and he was found guilty. So apparently he led a chant where he said, we want, quote, fewer Moroccan immigrants, not more. And I'm going to come back to that in a second, but let me give you more of the information here so you get the full picture. The Intercept explains, hours after a court in the Netherlands found the far-right politician Geert Wilders guilty of breaching anti-discrimination laws by railing against Moroccan immigrants at a rally, a poll found that 53% of the country opposed the ruling. Wilders, an extreme nationalist obsessed with the supposed threat to Dutch identity from Islam, promises to shut the nation's borders to Muslim immigrants, ban the Quran, close all mosques, and hold a referendum on leaving the European Union if he becomes prime minister. They continue. They say, his Party for Freedom, known by the Dutch acronym PVV, currently leads in the polls ahead of a general election in March, thanks in part to a surge in support during his trial. Following the guilty verdict, which came with no penalty, more than two-thirds of those surveyed told the Dutch pollster Maurice de Hond, they expected the ruling to result in the Party for Freedom winning more seats in the next parliament, and polls even show now that his party might end up with the most seats in Dutch parliament. So, what happened here is you had this court acting in, yes, in authoritarian leftist way, and as a result of that, you just made the right-wingers way more popular. And you made them more popular because, yeah, you're kind of persecuting them. They'll argue, oh, you're persecuting the Moroccan immigrants. But all he did was chant, we want fewer of them in the country. Now, if that's illegal to chant that, then isn't it illegal to have a conservative opinion on immigration? Now, understand, I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't. But I'm not going to lock people up for expressing conservative opinions on immigration. It's like if there was a rally and somebody in the U.S. I just got something in my eye. I don't know if it's out. But anyway, it's like if somebody in the U.S. Let a chant, we want fewer Mexican immigrants or fewer South American immigrants or something like that. I don't necessarily agree with that. But am I going to lock them up for chanting that? No. Am I going to lock somebody up for having the opinion that, hey, I want to shut down the borders? No. I'm not going to lock. I mean, it's actually crazy to insist that they should get locked up, because then what you're saying is it's only legal to have one opinion on immigration. We want more immigration. Now, this is not to say that he's not a bigot. Based on comments he's made, I'm pretty comfortable calling him a bigot. Based on saying you should ban the Quran, so he says his party for freedom. That ain't freedom, motherfucker. That's not freedom. Freedom is, yeah, even if books are shitty, even if it's Mein Kampf or whatever, you allow it. So, oh, I'm going to ban mosques and ban the Quran, but I'm for freedom. You're not for freedom. So I'm totally comfortable calling him an anti-Muslim bigot. But point is, just because he's an anti-Muslim bigot doesn't mean you find him guilty for hate speech, for saying, hey, I want fewer immigrants in the country. So, and look, this is a problem. When you try to control people to this extent and basically ban unpopular opinions or conservative opinions, you're going to find a giant increase in the popularity of those opinions, because there's this innate human thing where people will go, hey, you know what, man? Fuck you. Fuck you. Even if I don't agree with that person, fuck you. I'm standing in solidarity with them, because you just found them guilty of a crime for disagreeing with you. And you just found them guilty of a crime for having shitty beliefs. Where does it stop? You know, should we find everybody guilty in the South who's racist? Everybody who's ever flown a Confederate flag? Should we, in a fucking legal court, like, shame them? Oh, you're guilty of hate speech because you have these bad opinions. No, it's called they have shitty opinions. You argue with them in the free marketplace of ideas. And since your ideas are better, you would win that argument. But they've gotten so lazy, the authoritarian left, they go, we're not even going to bother to have the argument. We're just going to ban what you're saying. We're just going to find you guilty of hate speech. Well, then don't be surprised when the other side gets more popular, because you're not even bothering to make your case anymore. You're not even bothering to explain, like, oh, hey, look, here's the problem with this Gert character is, apart from the goofy peroxide hair, but he says he wants to ban mosques and ban the Quran, as he says he's for freedom. Do you not see the contradiction there? Do you not see how that is stupid? Do you not see how, hey, maybe it is a bigoted thing to say all Muslims are the problem and all immigrants who are Muslim are an issue? That's not true. Sure, there's a percentage of them that are fundamentalists that are a giant issue, and we need to address that. But to say, hey, they're all extremists, that's just not correct, and that is the definition of bigotry, so yes, you are a bigot. You can make that argument without saying court of law, found him guilty, censor him, because now you just made it much more likely he's going to be the next Dutch prime minister. And you have nobody to thank for that but yourself. Because he wouldn't have been this popular on his own. You're helping him. You're helping him by persecuting him, by oppressing him, by saying, I'm going to find you guilty in a court of law for saying shitty things. No, don't do that. Don't do that. And this goes for, you know, left-wingers and right-wingers. Because I don't want to give the misimpression here that, like, the authoritarian left is, like, the only authoritarian movement. No, Geert Wilders is kind of authoritarian in his own right. To say, hey, I'm going to ban the Quran and ban mosques, that's as authoritarian as it gets. But like we discussed the other day, you know, like in the rural southern parts of the U.S., they banned an atheist billboard that said, hey, don't go to church on Christmas, and they showed atheists celebrating Christmas. They banned it because they were offended. They were triggered. They needed a safe space. So they pulled that down. You know, you have people trying to fire people. Somebody made a joke about Trump fucking his daughter the other day. Politico fired her like that. We're speeding up our contract end with her because, oh, we can't believe she said this. So I need people to stop policing speech with, you can disagree with anybody you want, obviously. But if you take it to a court of law and you find them guilty of hate speech, fuck you. only direct threats of violence and things like that should be illegal. Other than that, you should be able to say whatever you want. And you could be wrong and you could be disgusting, and we'll argue against you, but you should be allowed to say it. And if you try to censor people, or ban people, or get people fired, that's where I have an issue. You can say whatever you want outside of that. But unfortunately, on the right and the left, we have these people taking it a step further now, where they go, oh, maybe I try to get you fired, or maybe I ban you, or maybe I censor you, or maybe I find you guilty of hate speech. Don't do that, because every time you do that, you're making them much stronger. Because you're saying, I don't want to engage those ideas, I want to shut those ideas down and not even allow the conversation, which makes people go, naturally, hey, why are you trying to shut that down? And maybe there's something to talk about here. Let's go talk about that underground. Have it all out in the open place, in the open, man, free marketplace of ideas. That's the way to do it. That's the way to move forward. stop making him more popular with his odious ideas because you don't want to engage them. You'd rather shut down the debate and just say he's, you know, guilty of hate speech. By the way, if the roles were reversed, would that be hate speech? If there was a fundamentalist Muslim in one of these countries who says, you know, all Dutch are responsible for the crimes of Westerners, or all Westerners are responsible for the crimes of the U.S. government or the U.K. government with their bombing campaign and their killing of children in Iraq and other places. If they said that, would that be hate speech? Blaming all Dutch or all Americans for the crimes of the government? Would that be hate speech? Would it be hate speech for them to say, you know, we want fewer Europeans in government here? We want more Muslims in government? Is that hate speech? Because is the standard going to be equal? No, of course not going to be equal. It's going to be, hey, they're a minority community, so you can't talk against them, but they can say anything they want against you, which, again, is this weird double standard where you would make him stronger because people would go, that doesn't really make much sense. You see what I'm saying? So, again, I don't agree with the guy. I think he is a bigot. I think he is a loathsome character. But I wouldn't find him guilty of hate speech. I would just argue against him and expose him for the clown that he is, and I think we'd win in the long run because our ideas are better than their ideas. Okay. Now, let's do one more before the final break. Or maybe two. We'll see. We will see. We will see. There was nothing short of a legislative coup in North Carolina by the Republican Party. So the Democratic Party, or excuse me, the Democratic candidate won the election for governor, but the incumbent Republican contested it basically for as long as possible. So the Democrat won by 4,300 votes, and the Republican governor was like, no, I want a recount, I want this, I want that. He accused the Democrats of widespread voter fraud. There was no evidence of that whatsoever. Eventually, he had to concede because it was just obvious that the Democrat won. So in response to that, the state legislature, where the Republicans have a supermajority, they took action. Now, understand, they only have a supermajority because of gerrymandering. So they basically cheated. What they did is, and this is not me speaking, this is a court in North Carolina speaking, they said, whoa, you guys drew the districts with almost surgical precision to put all the African Americans in one district and everybody else, you've spread it around and make it as Republican as possible. So do you understand that dirty trick? If they draw the districts in a normal way, you would have way more elected Democrats. But they drew it specifically to have just a few solidly Democratic districts, and then the overwhelming majority of the districts being Republican. So this is gerrymandering 101. So they cheated to get the supermajority in the first place. But then now that they have the supermajority, and they've had the supermajority, they're handcuffing the new Democratic governor. Oh, boy. Now, they've had everything, every step of the way. They had a supermajority plus the Republican governor, so the Republicans have been going nuts, turning North Carolina into Ayn Rand's wet dream. But, so let me tell you what they did to try to handcuff this Democratic governor. They took over, so when they took over, there were 500 positions that were appointed by governor. But when the Republican won, they went, oh, that's cute, how about we expand that to 1,500 appointments by the governor? Because it was Republican, and they're like, oh, we're going to get a lot out of this. Okay, up it, up it, up it, up it, 1,500. Now that you have the Republican leaving and the Democrat coming in, they're shrinking that number to 300. 500 appointments were what happened before the Republicans came in. The Republicans go in, they're like, let's change it. We get to do 1,500 appointments, the Republican governor does. When the Democrat comes in now, they're like, oh, they could cut that. Not even back to 500, down to 300. So they are handcuffing this guy like there's no tomorrow. And it's super brazen. That's the other thing about it that's amazing. is that they feel like they can get away with it, likely because they can get away with it, because the media does such a shitty job. People don't really cover it. I'm not sure how the local press is covering it, but there was some backlash to this. There was people, like, stormed the government buildings in North Carolina, and they were like, no, we're not going to fucking stand for this. So, but this is, by the way, the new Republican trick, is you find a way to rig the rules of the game to hold on to power even when you're not in power. And also, they don't care about the ideological consistency of it either, because think about it. They all say small government, small government, small government. That's what we're in favor of. But when they were in power, they said they want as big a government as possible. They're screaming about small government right now, but in over 20 states, there's this giant push to force women who have abortions or miscarriages to have funerals for the fetal remains. They're not principled in any way, shape, or form. This, when I have control, I want to be able to do whatever I want to do. I want to be as authoritarian as possible. When you have control, I want you to have no power at all. So in a lot of weird ways, not to throw my dad under the bus here, but I always found it funny. My dad was a right-leaning guy, and he, at one point in his life, he decided, this was after my mother and father divorced and he was living on his own, he wanted to be on the board of this little development where he was living. And so he got on the board. I think he eventually became like president or some shit of the board. And so he got to allocate funds for certain things. Now, remember, right-leaning guy, always, get the government out of my way, I don't want any central command, whatever. Soon as he got power, he upped everybody's, whatever the fees are to stay there for the maintenance and the cutting the lawn and the snow removal and all that stuff. And he did that because he wanted to plant pretty flowers all over the development. Now, look, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But number one, you should make sure everybody agrees with it before you do it. And number two, you should have been upfront about it. Like, oh, this is what I believe in. Like, I believe in the philosophy of expanding, you know, how much money we have to do certain things. But no, your personal opinions when you're not in power are, oh, don't take my money. How dare you do that? Soon as you get in power, oh, I'm going to plant flowers all over the place. Like, that bothers me, that, like, disconnect that people have. And this is what the Republicans are doing. Oh, you know, look, we believe in small government, which is why when our guy got elected, we expanded the number of positions that the governor can appoint to 1,500. And now we're going back to 300. We're going below what it was to 300. So this is a disgusting situation, and I feel horrible for the Democrats. They need to fight in North Carolina, and they need to make their case, and they need to let the people know that the Republicans are screwing them. Okay. Let me take a break, and then when we come back, we have justice being served against Dylann Roof and anti-Muslim Congressman Peter King met with Donald Trump. Okay, stay right there. We'll give you all of that and then some.
Baby, give my order right, no errors. I'm I'ma put you in all the right areas. I can feed you, you can feed me. Girl, deliver that to me, come see me. Cause it's me, you, you, me, you, all night. Have it your way or play before I feed your appetite. Do you like it well done? Cause I do it well. Cause I'm well seasoned, if you couldn't tell. Now let me walk into your body till you hear me out. Turn me on, my baby, don't you cut me out. Say, take my order, cause your body like a carry out. Let me walk into your body till you hear me out. Turn me on, my baby, don't you cut me out. Turn me on, my baby, don't you cut me out. Take my order, cause your body like a carry out. And let me walk into your body till the night's out. Turn me on, my baby, don't you cut me out. Turn me on, my baby, don't you cut me out. Cut me out. What's your name?
By the way, I was wrong. I was wrong yesterday. There is a show on Monday. There's not a show on Thursday and Friday. So it's the show, the schedule next week is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. There's not a show on Thursday and Friday. And actually on the Monday after, too. So it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So that's five straight days of no secular talk. And please try to not kill yourselves. That's a dickish thing to say. Anyway, so there is a show on Monday. I had said yesterday there's no live show on Monday. Wrong. There is a live show on Monday. There's not a live show. Thursday, Friday, obviously Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday. Boom. Shakalaka. So it's a little break for Christmas. Plus, I got that extra day in there because I gotta take care of some shit. The most annoying thing ever, getting that thing in the mail. I got a thing in the mail that was like, yeah, you got to renew your license, and here's the fucking steps to renew your license, and it involves fucking doing this and that and this and that and that and this and blah, 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 blah. I need an eye test. It's just gross. If you can't tell, I'm pretty annoyed by it. But anyway, so I got to take care of all that. So anyway, let's continue here. Let me give you some kind of good news. We have a rare instance of justice being served. We have a jury on Thursday convicted Dylan Roof of slaughtering 9 black members of a Charleston, South Carolina church. He was convicted of 33 different federal charges, from hate crimes to the obstruction of the practice of religion to, of course, murder. He walked into the historic Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, commonly referred to as Mother Emmanuel, in June 2015, and there was a Bible study going on, and he sat with the congregation members before he took out a gun and went on a rampage, and he massacred everybody in sight. This was, of course, a horrific, disgusting terrorist attack. Now, not everybody calls it a terrorist attack, but they're wrong to not call it a terrorist attack. It is the textbook definition of a terrorist attack. You have somebody who's committing an act of violence for a political reason. You know, terrorism is committing an act of violence for a political or religious reason. He's doing it for a political reason. The reason being, you can read, he had a manifesto where he lays out, I believe in Rhodesia, you know, I believe in apartheid South Africa, I believe in the Confederacy. I hate that these blacks are raping our women on a daily basis, and they're beasts, and they're inferior, and we're superior, and I want to start a race war. So he was a white supremacist terrorist. There's no way around that. And it's sad that people don't call him a terrorist, because what that means is, in their mind, it's just reserved for, it's only when a Muslim does an act of violence in the name of religion, then we'll call somebody a terrorist. But if it's a white supremacist or a Christian supremacist or any other version, even like a communist, you know, some sort of communist who does an act of violence in order to push further their political ideology, it's just not used in other contexts, and it should be used in other contexts. So they found him guilty. They haven't decided yet if they're going to go for the death penalty or not. See, it's times like this where I feel compelled to have the conversation about the death penalty yet again, because I'm against the death penalty, but I'm only against the death penalty because, according to a study, we covered the study about a year and a half ago or so, 4% of people on death row didn't do it, which is crazy. I mean, that's really nuts when you think about it. 4% of people didn't do it? I mean, that's, you're murdering 4 out of every 100 people you kill on death row. So that's a system where you are killing innocent people because killing innocent people is a crime. That's a contradiction I can't get over. So by that logic, we have to give the death penalty system the death penalty. You see what I'm saying? So I can't have it because of that. Now, where I differ from other liberals and progressives, or I should say many other liberals and progressives, because I'm sure some agree with me, and I'm sure some are in favor of the death penalty, but where I disagree with them is when we have a case of somebody who we know for sure did it, he admitted to doing it. In fact, the jury got to see his admission. He's like, look, let's cut to the chase. You know I did it. I know I did it. There's like video of him walking fucking out of the church. They know. Everybody knows. Everybody knows he did. When you have a case like this where it's a slam dunk case and there is zero hope for rehabilitation, there's just no hope for rehabilitation. I would view killing Dylann Roof, I wouldn't shed a goddamn tear. I wouldn't shed a single tear. It wouldn't keep me up at night. I wouldn't feel bad about it. I would in no way, shape, or form do a moral equivalence on this issue where he guns down 9 innocent people who are just at a freaking Bible study. And then what? Are we really going to make the argument? Oh, the state would be just as evil as him in killing him as he killed those innocent people. You don't even believe that. Even if you're a liberal, you don't believe that. You think those killings are equal? You think killing Dylann Roof is equal to the level of immorality of Dylann Roof massacring 9 innocent people who did nothing wrong to anybody? That's just not true. I can't get behind that argument. That's just inaccurate. That's false. I don't agree with that. So I wouldn't feel bad. If they come out and they say, yeah, we're going with the death penalty for him, I wouldn't feel bad, and I wouldn't be out there fucking protesting against it. Now, there are liberals who probably would go out there and say, you know what, no, we got to be better and blah, 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 so I'm going to go out there and do it. But again, that's where I separate from other liberals, and maybe you could say I'm not as liberal or whatever it is, but I struggle with this. I struggle with this issue where you have somebody who you know did it, there's zero hope for rehabilitation, and to get rid of Dylann Roof, I'm going to be harsh, but I think it's true. You're just eliminating a problem. The guy's a problem. He's a bad person. So there is no benefit. There is no gain to keeping him around. And furthermore, like if I were to talk to the families of the people who were murdered, and they were to say, kill him, I'm pressing that button, man. Again, maybe that makes me a bad liberal or whatever, but in a weird way, I actually think that would be the more liberal thing to do. Because what you're doing is your sympathy is reserved for the victim of the crime. when you have, if you were to stand up and argue on behalf of him, when we know he did it and we know there's no hope for rehabilitation, and even the family's like, I would sleep better at night if you got rid of him, I feel like the more liberal thing is to say, my sympathy remains with the victims and fuck this monster. You see what I'm saying? Now, again, I know a lot of people will disagree with me on this for whatever reason, but I felt compelled to come out here and explain to you my line of thinking. And also here's an important point that I think never is discussed, which is the argument against the death penalty, which resonates better with people, is mine. Now, I'm not saying that for, like, conceited fucking, you know, self-aggrandizement reasons. I'm saying that for strategic reasons. Because when it comes to, when you look at the polls, the American people are overwhelmingly liberal. I mean, on virtually every issue, they're like, yeah, we want to stop the wars overseas. Yeah, we want to raise the minimum wage. Yeah, we want to tax the rich more. Yeah, we want to not cut Social Security and education spending. I mean, you name the issue, I will show you the poll, legalize marijuana. The American people are liberal. They're just liberal. There's one very important issue where they are not liberal, the death penalty. So with that being the case, I'm of the belief we can sway them to be against the death penalty, but we ain't going to do it with the goofy argument of, oh, it is equally immoral for the state to murder Dylann Roof as it is for Dylann Roof to murder those innocent people. Because I don't think that's true, and I think people will scoff at you if you say that. They'll go, yeah, that's just as bad as us to fucking have a process and find a guy guilty who did it and have a punishment for it as somebody who murdered innocent people and shot him in the face. Idiot, liberal, bleeding heart, pussy, bitch. That's going to be the response. But there is, again, I think there's one argument that could win him over. It's the argument that won me over, which is the only reason I'm against the death penalty is because by definition, if you have a death penalty system, you are going to get some of the wrong people. And if you get some of the wrong people, that means you're okay with murdering innocent people sometimes. And that's not okay. You shouldn't be okay with that. That is a fucking savage, barbaric thing to believe. That, yeah, every now and then we kill an innocent one, so it is what it is, whatever. No, that's monstrous. So you can convince people on that argument, I think. People who aren't usually involved in politics and they just want to give you their opinion on it, people like that. I think you can convince them by saying we kill the wrong people all the time and that's unacceptable. I don't think you can convince them with the argument of the more liberal argument or perceived more liberal argument of, hey, it's morally equivalent if we kill him as him killing those innocent people. Because I don't think that resonates. I don't think that's true. And I think the polls are on our side. I think we haven't been using the argument for the broader population of we kill the wrong people, because I think that's the argument that would get them to flip it. And it would be, the polls would be on our side on the death penalty, too, if we keep making that argument. But if we keep making bad arguments, like making a moral equivalence between Dylann Roof and the justice system that might put him to death, I think you're going to keep losing that argument, and the death penalty will remain popular. That's just my take on it. I wanted to share my thoughts on the death penalty with you guys. I'm against it, and I get rid of the system, but I am not going to shed a goddamn tear. I'm not going to be disturbed for a second if they decide we're done with this guy. This guy's getting it. Okay. More. Notorious anti-Muslim Congressman Peter King of New York had a meeting with Trump yesterday. And guess what he proposed in their talks? I don't even think I need to say it. You know. So Newsday explains here. King told reporters after the discussion at Trump Tower in Manhattan that he relayed recommendations for the Justice Department and the FBI to be more leaning forward when it comes to investigating Islamist terrorism. He said, quote, I suggested a program similar to what Commissioner Kelly did here in New York, and that we can't worry about political correctness. So for those of you who don't know what that was, it was blanket dragnet surveillance of all Muslims in New York City. Blanket dragnet surveillance of all Muslims in New York City. If you're Muslim, you have zero Fourth Amendment rights. You have no protection from unreasonable search and seizure. The government was up your ass. Now, That's, number one, massively unconstitutional. But even putting that aside, the efficacy of it. Now, this is something where the right-wingers would go, I mean, come on, of course it's. Of course it's effective. Duh. Well, let's take a look at that. The NYPD themselves had to admit in a court of law, we got literally zero leads from this program. Zero. Because guess what? It turns out when you spy on an entire community, they turn against you and they don't like you and they view you as the other and they think that you're oppressing them because you are. Now, compare that to what they did in Canada, for example. There was a giant terrorist attack that was stopped because there was an open line of communication between cops in Canada and the Muslim community. So there was an imam who went to the police who said, look, man, we got these guys coming to the mosque, and they seem a little hoo-hoo. They seem a little off and like they drank the jihadist Kool-Aid, if you know what I'm saying. So I think that they're planning something. You might want to look into them. And then the cops looked into them, and they had probable cause because of the information given by the imam, and boom, what'd they find? Hey, they were planning a train attack, and they foiled the plot. So they got more done by having open lines of communication with the community and trusting the community and respecting the community and understanding that most Muslims are not terrorists. So when you accept that and you treat them like that, look at that. Turns out they want to help everybody in sight. And, oh, hey, man, look, I think this guy, I think something's going on here. I think something's going on there. So, but look, that's not the only argument. Like the argument of, oh, they're helpful in stopping other terrorist attacks. That's true, but that's also not the only reason why you shouldn't fucking otherize them and be tribalistic in your approach to them. There are basic civil liberties and human rights reasons why you don't take an entire religion and go, you're all just as bad as Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Basic human decency should lead you in that direction. But if basic human decency isn't enough for you, efficacy of it should be enough for you because it's massively unconstitutional, and also they got literally zero leads off of it. But Peter King being the idiot he is and Donald Trump being the moron he is, they got together and go, yeah, you know, I think we should spy on the Muslims. I think it's tremendous. Peter King's like, oh, yeah, no, totally not. We don't have any political correctness is the problem. Political correctness, we've got to find political correctness. Peter, it's not political correctness. It's correctness. There's not a single liberal in the country that would say to you, hey, if you have probable cause, if you have evidence, you can't get a warrant and do a search of certain Muslims who are suspected of a crime or suspected of terrorism. Everybody in the world agrees with that. Everybody in the world, hey, you have evidence, hey, you have probable cause, by all means, here's a warrant, go ahead and do your search. That's basic police work. But what you want to do is say, we don't need specific warrants to search specific people or places or things. We just want to, everybody in that community is guilty enough. But that's not true. And also, you have information overload when you do that. You're going to spy on all the Muslims? Well, guess what? There's enough Muslims as a percentage, it's a very small number in the U.S., obviously, which is why the fear of Sharia taking over is just stupid. But as a raw number, that's a lot of manpower that you need in the intelligence agencies to spy on all the different Muslims. That would take up all the time, and guess what? That's information overload, and you're never going to be able to actually detect the threat because you cast too wide a net, you fucking pricks. So, but these are the people, Trump, you know, cuddling up to people like this. That's wonderful. There's a new report out about the person Trump wants for Israeli ambassador. Oh, boy. This is a guy who's against the two-state solution, for Israel expanding settlements even further, and the guy is to the right of Benjamin Netanyahu. There are right-wing parties. Likud in Israel goes, you know, that guy's a little extreme. He even questioned the citizenship of Israeli Arabs. This is who Trump's surrounding himself with. John Bolton, the guy who never met a war he didn't like, wants to do a war with Iran right now, defends the Iraq war to this day. The guy who was the most aggressive in pushing the bullshit of Saddam Hussein did 9/11. Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. Who, a liar through and through, and a hawk through and through, and a neocon through and through. He wants him as number two at the State Department behind ExxonMobil CEO. Gee, I wonder if we're going to have oil wars as a result of this. So he's picking everybody super hawkish against civil liberties. There's no reason to defend this garbage. This guy's not draining the swamp. He's building a swamp on the White House lawn, and you need to know it. Let me give you some more, bitch. We're going to do a secular talk segment on sex shops. What? Yep, it's about to happen. There's a sex shop in Toledo that's under fire at the moment because of some offensive dildos that they're selling. So they have pictures of the Virgin Mary, Joseph, and baby Jesus painted on them. Hector Valdivielso, who is the owner of the store, said, "A man with his wife ordered me to remove the offending scene and said that if I didn't, he would remove it himself." So as a result of having this, his shop was vandalized. But what he did next is actually my favorite part. So shop was vandalized. Some people were super angry about religious-themed dildos. But what he did is he polled people and asked if he should keep the dildos up for sale. And he said, you know, whatever the response is, that's what we'll do. 78% of people were like, yeah, fuck them, keep it up. So we put them back up. I love that ending. Look, man, this is... people need to understand. If you're offended, we don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if you're offended. I couldn't care less. I discussed this the other day, but the word offended to me is a weird word, and it's a strange concept. Because it basically implies I'm offended. So something you said affected me in such a negative way that, like, I need you to take it back because of the how much it rattled me, you know? But I always think, yeah, but hold on. What if the thing that offends you is just true? Well, then what? Should we censor truth to care more about your feelings than the facts? Is that what you want to do? Or what if the thing that's offending you is just a joke that had no malicious intent? Because if it's a joke that has no malicious intent, I would argue they're just joking and there's no malicious intent. So if anything, the burden's on you to kind of get over it. It might make me sound like an ass, but what I'm trying to point out is that, no, they are actually kind of being an ass. Because you could be offended, but they don't have to care, and you don't get to control them because of your feelings. You see what I'm saying? So the whole thing, well, I'm offended. I don't really give a shit if you're offended. So, and it gets a lot worse than this, too. So this is horrific. But then everybody knows in certain countries, if you draw a cartoon of Muhammad, it goes beyond offense. They, you know, you could fucking get killed. Charlie Hebdo. Look what happened with Charlie Hebdo. So what's crazy is that they mask it as like, no, we're being macho and we're standing up for our honor. No, you're murdering people over cartoons. You were so fucking offended because you're such a little bitch that you murdered somebody over a drawing. So I don't care about how offended you are. I don't care. Now, that doesn't mean you can't make value judgments about people if they say something that's crass or, you know, indecent. Like, obviously, you could argue against somebody on the merits of what they're saying and say, hey, that's not true, or hey, you know, here's the issue with what you said there. I'm all for open discussion and dialogue, and you don't have to like the nativity scene dildos. You don't. Of course you don't. But it becomes a problem when you try to, like, you're trying to force him not to sell them anymore. Nobody can like them because I don't like them. Nobody can use them because I'm offended by them. Or not. How about that? So that's the problem. When it comes to banning or censoring or vandalizing or committing a crime over your feelings, because I got news for you. The actual crime being committed is what you're doing, not the person who offended you. So you shouldn't want to live in a society where anybody who's offended gets to dictate the rules of the game. No, you want to live in a society that embraces free speech and free expression, where, you know, the actual liberal thing to do is to say, even though I don't agree with you, I will defend your right to say what you're saying. And by the way, I'm not the first one to come up with that quote. A million philosophers have said it. But if you don't believe in free speech and free expression, if you don't believe in it for the people you disagree with the most, that's kind of what we have an example of here. Even if you're super religious, super Christian, and you see that and you're offended by it, you know, a secular society and a society that believes in human rights says you have your right to put that up. So I think you could tell what side I fall on in this whole thing. But there you have it, religious dildos. Something I never thought of before. Okay. All right, let me do, I think, one more, and then we'll call it a day. I got 5 minutes left here. Rosie O'Donnell is really upset about the election, so she wrote a poem to express that, and I want to break it down with you. I'm just going to give you parts of it here. She said, "I won't perform now. I can't. I hate what has become of the U.S. I must watch. I watched the new brilliant movie Christine. A news anchor killed herself live in 1974. Very well done. I considered that before. We have 7 days left to pull off the impossible. Stand up and say no. No to the darkness. Come on, electors. If ever there was a time for a musical ending, do you hear the people sing the song of angry men?" Okay, so there's a lot to break down here. I hope she's not serious about the committing suicide thing. Again, she said, "I watched the new brilliant movie Christine. A news anchor killed herself live in 74. Very well done. I considered that before." Ooh, wait, what? I would be curious. I would ask her, hey, look, when did you consider that? Why did you consider that? Did you consider it in the midst of your giant public fight with Donald Trump? Did you consider it after he won the nomination? When did you consider it, and is this an ongoing issue? And because that's not, like, you deserve help if that's the point you're at. Like, I'm saying this because I genuinely feel bad for what she's going through. But then also the we have 7 days left to pull off the impossible. Stand up and say no, no to the darkness. Come on, electors. She's asking them to overturn Donald Trump winning. Now, I don't know exactly if her argument is you should put in Hillary Clinton or you should pick another Republican. Because there is an argument that he's acting in an unconstitutional way because of foreign influence in his administration, you know, having giant business deals with other countries, and so that means that foreign governments might have some say in the direction he takes the country, which is not okay, whether it's business deals in India or business deals in Turkey or business deals in Mexico or China or whatever it is. So there's an argument that, oh, it's unconstitutional, you got to let him go. But that same argument could be used against Hillary Clinton because of the undue influence from Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the countries that gave her money for the Clinton Foundation. So some people are saying, okay, no him, but let's have the electors pick like John Kasich or somebody. Look, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's pie in the sky thinking. But I do think that they should follow through, obviously make Trump president because he won the Electoral College, okay? But I am in favor of getting rid of the Electoral College. So I have a lot of sympathy. Like, I put a lot of things in the hack category that Democratic partisans are making right now, the arguments they're making, of like, it, you know, blame James Comey and the FBI for her loss, blame Vladimir Putin, blame this, blame that. I don't, when people argue against the Electoral College, I don't put that in the hack category. I put that in the you're basically right category. I don't agree with the people who say, you know, let's use the Electoral College to just get Hillary in now. I think we should change the rules of the game, and then from when we change the rules of the game, everything moving forward, you have the popular vote win. It's a shame that she won by over 2 million votes and she didn't win the election, but that was the rules of the game. So I'm in favor of he should get it now because he won by the established rules, but we need to change those rules, and we need to change them ASAP to have it so that the popular vote wins. So I don't know exactly what she's calling for. I don't know if she wants a different Republican put in there, or I don't know if she wants, in her mind, Hillary Clinton or whoever, but I don't agree with her ultimate conclusion of this is so bad, this is so bad. I mean, it is really, really bad, but like we need to not have the electors do what they're supposed to do. That I disagree with, but I think she should get help if she's talking about, you know, potential suicide on TV. I mean, Rosie, that's serious stuff, man. This is, I know you're saying in a poem here, but it appears like you're serious, and that should merit action on your part and the people around you, your loved ones, to help you out, because that's not good. Okay. All right. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We will see you on Monday. Next week, there's no Thursday show, no Friday show. But we will see you on Monday. Mwah, much love. I'm out. Peace.